TCL is a proud sponsor of the 1500 ESPN Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves, the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Here we are, live streaming, Raised by Wolves, Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore, here at 1500 ESPN. We are streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, Twitter, just about everywhere.
You name it.
Yeah.
You name it, we're on
that's
it.
That's where we're at right now.
Is MySpace the whole thing?
MySpace actually came up in the office the other day. Like out of nowhere, MySpace
came up.
Under
what context?
Just like...
You're probably too young to have
MySpace. No, I had MySpace for like 3 months before the Facebook...
How old are you?
I'm 25. I had MySpace for about 3 months before like the Facebook boom really took off. Mm-hmm. So I had MySpace, and then all my friends started going on Facebook. I'm like, well, screw this. I don't need MySpace anymore.
So you were probably like what, like 13?
14 or 15. It was like freshman year of high school.
Okay.
And then like, I'm just going to, you know, get on Facebook now. So
I remember when Facebook was like, just like a college thing. Like
you needed a college email address.
Yeah. And then, yeah, it kind of expanded beyond that.
But it came up, like, Phil or Derek asked me, like, hey, did you ever have MySpace growing up? I was like, man, those 2 or 3 months were wild.
It was good for music. Like, that was its thing. Yeah. You could share your music. It was, like, one of the first places. Like,
yeah. I didn't make music.
Shout out to MySpace.
Exactly.
And Tom.
Wonder what Tom's up to.
That's a good question. What do you guys think Tom from MySpace is doing right now?
Watching the Timberwolves.
Probably. And probably wondering why the Wolves are so good at home and so god awful on the road, which is, I think, kind of the elephant in the room, the first thing we should get to. And I can't explain it. I'm watching them dominate a team that they had so much trouble with last week in Sacramento, and I'm just trying to make sense of it. And I mean, I think you look across the league, most teams have pretty bad road records, so it's kind of a league-wide thing, it seems like. But still, it's to see this team, to see it be night and day with this team versus, you know, with them being at home at Target Center versus on the road is incredible. I can't even explain it.
Well, I think you kind of got to zoom out of just, you know, this season or specifically the Sacramento game. I mean, last night, I mean, that game was great and exciting, but Sacramento is coming off a back-to-back. They're in the midst of a road trip. I mean, they kind of put up the white flag pretty early in that game.
Third and four nights, too.
Yeah.
I think last night really needs to be taken with a grain of salt.
Like, totally.
It's a good win, and the Wolves did some good things, but you also have to, like you said, step back and realize what the entire situation was.
Totally. But it has been a thing. I mean, last year, they had a terrible road record, and we're a dominant home team again. And it really is. It's a hard thing to, you know, explain or try and dissect. Like, you can, when it comes to like your team's 3-point shooting, you can talk about what are they doing to, you know, like foster those actions to get clean looks, or what are you doing on the defensive end against the pick and roll. You can do those sort of things, but when it comes to, you know, things that happen between the ears, it's a lot harder for us to even, you know, have an opinion on as to, you know, what is happening here. It reminds me of, remember 2 years ago when they were just like awful in third quarters?
Yeah.
Like, they'd start off every third quarter, and they just get run off the floor. And it's like, you can't necessarily point to something like they're doing this on the floor differently. No, it's like, it's between the ears. It's something that they're not able to mentally come out and execute in a way. And I don't know, it's a really hard conversation to have, or an educated one, you know, because you can't really know. It's on the guys.
And I also think it's worth noting, looking at the Western Conference, only 4 teams have 500 or better records on the road. So 11 of the 15 teams out west are below 500 in road games. Like, that's pretty notable. It's not as if the Wolves are the only team struggling on the road. Now, granted, they've got the worst road record, or second worst if Phoenix is 2-13, so they're a half game worse, I guess, but... Mm-hmm. It's a league-wide thing. This isn't a... It is a problem for the Wolves, but it's not a specific Minnesota problem.
You know, there's always the... One thing you can't control on the road is like the way your team practices, when your team practices, if they do shoot around or not. And there's one thing that was big last year for Houston, who ended up winning 65 games and put, obviously, strung together a really good road record, and they didn't shoot around the whole year. Their whole thing was get into the town, sleep in. We're not going to be there in the morning. Come, you know, come at night, get yourself ready to go. They kind of threw out that old mentality of we're going to walk through some things in the morning, go over a little bit of film, and they traded that all out for, you know, get your sleep, get yourself mentally, you know, engaged in a way. And obviously that doesn't really sound like a Thibodeau thing because
it's not.
Yeah, no. Because it's not. You know, you
got to work hard, you got to study.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, his teeth were cut, you know, in the, you know, the 90s, 2000s where that, you know, that was a thing. But, you know, I guess I'm just trying to find what are things you can do. And I'm just looking right now. Houston, who only has 15 total wins, they have 8 at home, 7 on the road. So there isn't a huge, you know, discrepancy on what they're doing. Maybe that isn't the magic pill or anything like that, but I think it is a league-wide problem. Is that Manny or Danny? I don't know which one you just said that, but
that's me.
Sorry, you know,
both of us.
It's things that teams should address, and if you could find, you know, any team, if you could find what that is to make yourself, you know, approximate what you are at home as to on the road, that'd be a huge, like, competitive advantage. And well, it's a disadvantage, obviously, right now for the Wolves.
I mean, if you can figure out a way to go somewhere around 500 on the road, you're going to be a successful team because you're naturally just going to win more games at home than you do on the road for a multitude of reasons, but can't figure out how to win on the road.
The best road record in the whole West is the Nuggets at 8-6. That's not that good.
It's not good at all.
It's crazy.
It's good for them, but it's like, if that's the best road record, you're like, oh, really?
Right.
Okay. I mean, the only team in the entire NBA that is more than 3 games above 500 on the road is Toronto. That's it.
Way above 500.
They're 12-5 away from, I think now it's the Scotiabank Center. I think it changed this year.
I still call it Air
Canada. Well, I think this is the first year it's different. But they're 12-5 away from there, and they're the only team like that. Like, Milwaukee's got the second best record in the East. They're 7-6 away from Pfizer Forum. Like, it is not just a problem one in the West or two in Minnesota. It's a problem across the entire NBA. No one can find a way to win on the road this year.
And it's probably energy, right? I mean, that's the biggest thing.
Potentially, and I'm curious how many of these are second night of a back-to-back where you have to travel somewhere. Mm-hmm. And those things that aren't necessarily available just looking at the standings page that lists home and road record also play into whether or not you can win on the road.
Totally. No, totally.
But I also wonder, I mean, because the back-to-backs have been cut down just with the way that the shift in the scheduling where they sort of stretched out the regular season by a couple of weeks the last couple of years now.
But so that's for both sides. That's home and road.
Sacramento really got screwed. I don't know why the NBA thinks a Dallas-Minnesota back-to-back is okay. Like, that's not close.
Right. After they played in Golden State on Friday.
Yeah, like, that's a terrible stretch for the Kings.
Still a good win for the Wolves. I mean,
oh, no doubt. Yeah. And they needed it to potentially salvage a tiebreaker that could come into play later in the season. They need to win their last game against Sacramento to break even and push it further down the ladder, or else that could be the difference between making the playoffs or not, potentially.
We were talking about this last night. Like, do you put Sacramento for the rest of the season, like, above where the Wolves are?
I mean, the Wolves have to figure out a way to win on the road. It's hard to take the Wolves seriously until they actually beat a Western Conference team outside of Target Center.
Yeah. But they illustrated last night that they have so much more talent than a Sacramento team does. And I just think that's, in the West, bigger
picture.
See,
I don't know. I mean, like, Sacramento's best player played 6 minutes last night. Yeah,
but it's De'Aaron Fox, and the Wolves' best player is Karl Anthony Towns. Like, there's a big talent chasm.
I mean, if we're doing a draft between those two teams, yes, Cat's the first pick. Fox is the second pick. I'm taking Fox before anyone else on the Wolves.
Covington?
Yeah, I'm taking Fox before him. Covington's a 3-and-D guy, and he's great, and he's a complimentary player. But Fox is a guy that's going to be a star. Like, he's an all-star potential guy. I'm taking De'Aaron Fox over him.
Derrick Rose having a better year than him, though?
Potentially, but...
Like, obviously,
The Derrick Rose thing could end tomorrow, and it wouldn't surprise anybody.
Right. No, that's true. Fox is probably a safer...
A much safer pick. And there has not been a better jump from year one to year two this year in the NBA from a guy that maybe wasn't as good as a lot of people expected him to be as a rookie last year and then has really just come out of the gates blazing hot this year. And I was disappointed that selfishly, I didn't get to watch him really play last night.
Yeah,
because
right.
he didn't play a second after his first shift of the game.
So weird.
Yeah. I wonder if...
Kudos to Gager for realizing what it was, though, and essentially giving a bunch of his guys the night off. The only starter that played more than 10 minutes and 22 seconds was Buddy Hield.
I wonder, too, if Sacramento, you just look at their playing style. I mean, they may not have as much talent as the Wolves, but I love the way they play.
Fast.
They shoot a lot of threes. And Jaeger is a guy that came from Memphis. He came from the grit and grind era of the Memphis Grizzlies, where they were playing slow and just relying on their defense and shortening games and things like that. But Jaeger got to Sacramento, and he's looking at the players that he has and says, look, we need to play up-tempo. We need to play fast. We've got this roadrunner point guard in De'Aaron Fox. Like, let's utilize this guy's skills that push the ball up the floor. And they score a lot of points, and that's how they win. And I
the Wolves defense couldn't. I mean, on Friday when they're playing them, the Wolves defense wasn't setting.
Right,
and they didn't have a chance to.
Yeah, they're getting buried behind screens, and it was just pull up three, or one pass into three, and you're not getting out there to contest. And they got shooters, you know, like they're fast, and they have players who, you know, are above average shooters on their team, and that's I mean, to your point, to Jaeger's credit, and I think it's. It's also worth noting that they were last in pace last year with the same coach and a lot of the same players. And it's just saying, you know, I'm going – and Thibodeau said this too. He said, you know, Jaeger recognized what the qualities of his players are, and he embraced that. And, you know, there's a lot of coaches, I mean, namely Thibodeau, but other ones around the league too, who kind of are more focused on doing their system and what it is and having those players, you know, approximate that rather than adjusting. And so, I mean, yeah, Jaeger's got to be up there in the – in the Coach of the Year conversation.
And it makes me wonder, too, because I'm watching last night, and Jeff Teague didn't play last night. And it just seemed like when he didn't play...
Dude, it's going to hurt his numbers so much. That game is going to hurt his numbers. Like, comparatively to everyone else who's going to get, like, a plus 30 boost. Like, oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, but it's like the Wolves pushed the pace last night, and it worked. And, you know, and, of course, Sacramento was... Jaeger waved the white flag after halftime, basically, and just said, okay,
before
that's
that.
It. But, I mean, the Wolves were running them out of the gym in the second quarter. And,
well, and you texted me last night that you're about ready to say this team doesn't need Jeff Teague anymore.
Yeah, I'm just starting to wonder that. And it doesn't mean that Jeff's a bad player. It doesn't mean that he shouldn't be on a roster in the league. But I'm just wondering if – and, again, it's just one game, so you don't want to go too crazy with hyperbole on this, but – I just wonder if you look at the rest of
the road trip.
Yeah.
He didn't help the road trip.
And I, you know, there's so many times, and we've talked about it on this podcast before. There's so many times where I'm watching Jeff Teague and I'm thinking, Jeff, push the pace, run, you know, you got to stop, get out and run. Cause you've got the horses to do it. You've got an athletic wing like Andrew Wiggins who can run the floor. You got Josh Okogie. You've got Karl Anthony Towns. You've got guys that can run the floor and make things happen at a faster pace, but he's just walking it up, and then he's barely getting across the timeline before the 8 seconds, and it's like, come on.
And I've kind of been saying since I got here that I don't think he's a great fit with what they need to be doing offensively. And a lot of his stat lines, like he had 18 assists in, I forget which game it was. I think it was the last game of their last homestand. He had like 18 assists. And I'm like, you know, I didn't think Jeff Teague played well. Like, his numbers look a lot better than his actual play sometimes.
Well, yeah, and it you know, brings up a bigger conversation. Because I've usually tried to play the card of, like, all right, you know, Jeff Teague isn't the worst player in the world. Like, he does some good things.
No,
He's not a bad player.
But still, at this point, for me, I'm just like, I'm not going to do the defending of him anymore. I'm not going to fuel the dumpster fire of, like, Aaron, he's the worst thing ever. But I'm just like, you kind of got to show me something. Like, it doesn't appear to me that even when you are putting up the stats, that they're those kind of like high leverage ones that are really driving winning. It's just kind of at best the game management quarterback, you know.
Yeah.
And but the question, you know, becomes is like, I'm not totally against Manny's text, but it's like, what are you gonna? You can't just like bench him,
right?
Like.
You got to play him.
You
fire up the trade machine.
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking about that. And it's like, so like George Hill, right, last year with the Kings, they just basically kind of like pulled him out of the rotation. It's the same thing. I mean, he was making $20 million, like Deke's making 19, signing the same offseason.
Cavs kind of did the same thing with him this year.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, granted, he spent a lot of time in Cleveland hurt this year, so he never really got going there.
Right.
But the plan all along, once they started losing and realized that, oh, yeah, we're actually not good at all here in Cleveland.
Right.
The plan was, all right, well, we're going to trade you. Like, mm-hmm. They never expected him to play this year. And the Kings essentially, which I don't understand why he signed that deal there. Like, he just wanted to get paid, and that must have been it. But there was no reason behind it.
But they were bad, and the Cavs are bad, too. And I think that's the difference between the Wolves. Like, those teams didn't have, you know, like,
any aspirations. They had aspirations of the number one pick.
Exactly. Yeah. So it kind of, like, changes the calculus a little bit. Like, you kind of do need to try and get something out of him. You know, like, you need to find a way to make
I mean, the Kings got a rotational piece for Hill, and Amon Shumpert plays a good amount of minutes for them. He was out last night with, I believe, hip soreness.
I think it was a personal thing.
I thought Jaeger said something about his hip. But, yeah, he didn't play last night.
Mm-hmm.
but that's a rotational piece for George Hill. It's not when you sign George Hill to that contract, you were not getting the expected value in Amon Shumpert, but you were getting something for him.
Right. I think it's just it's hard, and, you know, when you do fire up the trade machine to find a team that would say, like, yeah, we want Jeff Teague. Like, I mean, the league's just loaded with point guards right now. Mm-hmm. And you look at the two teams that have, like, the real gaps are Phoenix. They apparently don't even want one. They just waived Austin Rivers.
They don't want to win.
Yeah, they don't want to win. They're just going to roll with DeAnthony Melton and whatever else there. Jawan, I mean, like, barely NBA players at point guard. And then you got Orlando, but it's hard. Like, you could say, yeah, Orlando is trying to make the playoffs. Like, they could use a vet point guard, but it's hard to make something work there. Like, if you're the Wolves, you don't want to take back Bismack Biyombo. Like,
that's
you don't
such
want,
a bad contract.
You know, there's just, there's like...
Because that's the other part of it, is Jeff's contract makes it hard because you're going to have to
in,
get the math
Charlotte now.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking Mozgov, who they got.
Also a bad contract.
Real bad contract.
Slightly, but, I mean, 16 mil. For the next two, which Jeff Teague's at 19, and at this point, I don't know what Jeff Teague's going to do this summer.
That's
because he's got that $19 million player option. He's not going to get $19 million per from anybody.
He's taking that, man. He's opting in, and then
if I were him, I would.
Like,
if I were him, I'm opting in, man. I'm taking that
totally.
Money.
That's I mean, like you said with George Hill, took that money. Trevor Ariza took that money to go play in Phoenix. Like, guys are going to take the money, like. I would.
We talked about this before, too. The only reason I could see him not taking that money is if he thinks he can get longer-term security. Less annually, but a three-year contract.
And like 336?
Yeah, but I don't know if... Then you're kind of sitting back and saying, well, do I want to take this 19 this year and still, you know, play out the year and still hope to get another two- or three-year contract after that? You know, so that might be what he decides to do.
It's just it's a huge factor for the Wolves, you know, going forward and what they can be. And I don't know if that's a shift in the rotation in some sort of way, but like they need to get more out of him to, you know, to make something happen, you know, that they can play a game like this where they are able to push the pace more. I mean, yeah, you talked about the second quarter when they're running it and like blew up that lead big time.
Mm-hmm.
But even you right from the get go, Derrick Rose started a point guard. And he's getting that ball at the court in 3 seconds rather than six or
and
seven.
And Rose didn't shoot the ball well last night, but I thought he gave them really good point guard minutes.
Yeah.
And this was the first time he had an assist points double-double since he was a member of the Knicks.
Wow.
Like it had been a long time. He had a double-double in the first half, and he didn't shoot the ball well, but he was productive. And that's something that you can't always say. Even if his stat line or his assist numbers aren't as inflated as Jeff Teague, you can't always say he played well, no matter what his stat line said. Like, Rose was 3 of 12 from the floor, but I thought he played a solid game. And conversely, it's kind of unleashed Tyus Jones. Like, last night, what Tyus Jones gave the Wolves is what I think the Wolves should be able to expect from him on a regular basis. But also, he didn't share the floor with a point guard at all last night. Him and Rose did not play a single second on the floor together. And I think that's a big deal for Tyus because it allows him to be the playmaker instead of having two of them where Rose is the better one at that point.
And Tibbs loves to have those two point guards out there. He likes to have the multi-pick and roll attack. And I get that, you know, I get that to some degree. But if we, you know, roll with this no Jeff Teague fantasy, there becomes a question of how do they, you know, who is that second you know, pick and roll initiator on this team. There, I mean, there isn't another point guard,
right?
And you know, Robert Covington does not have a good handle, and neither is Wiggins. But Wiggins is one I'd like to see more of that. If you know something happens or you know, Teague misses an extended period of time, I think they should try again.
I agree
with the you know, particularly the high pick and roll with Cat. We've talked about that before too. But just like initiate all Wiggins actions with Cat, like that can be dangerous. Like obviously it's dangerous because Cat's in it, but if it also frees Wiggins up to, you know, have a little bit more space to rely on that attacking ability, mm-hmm. more so than just the ISO pull-up, like, that could be a weapon. I'd like to see more Wiggins, you know, pick and rolls, but you're not going to get that when it's Teague and Rose out there, because they're right.
They're going to be the ball-dominant guys.
Exactly. And,
yeah. Let's get to, Dane, let's get to your piece that you had yesterday. And you mentioned the rotations, and that you dove into that a little bit. And it was a way to get Josh Okogie back into the thick of things and sort of expand this to a 10-man rotation to where you're not really yanking back. You're finding a way to get everybody that you want into the game and to have a significant role in the game without, you know, having to really sacrifice anybody, so to speak.
Well, I just think that, like, I hear when people are saying, you know, let's give Josh Okogie, you know, four or 5 minutes in each half.
It's deafening.
Yeah.
Of course you hear it. Everyone says it.
But it's a lot harder to do than you're just, you know, saying that. You can't, like, if they were to do that, just add it to 10, like, keep the starters as is, add it to 10, it would throw off what the rotation has been that has led to an excellent bench play mm-hmm. since the trade. And, like, you can't ignore that. Just because Josh Okogie has crazy bounce and crazy energy, like, that could have an adverse effect if you just added him into the 10-man rotation. So what I wrote about is, you know, finding a way that you're allowing, that you keep that second unit, that Covington plus the, you know, those four bench guys together, you know, for 10, 15, 20 minutes a game while also playing Okogie. And I think that what I threw out there is Okogie starting. And then you put him in with that group, and you have Wiggins come off the bench. And, I mean, on a podcast here, I can't really, like, you know, show you everything that's going on. But
you can check it out at 1500ESPN.com.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. There you go. I mean, I just think that's, like, a possibility. And it'd be one of those, like, starters who doesn't really play starter minutes. You know, and I remember, like, Keith Bogans did that with mm-hmm. with the Nets back in the day when they were – not back in the day, a couple years ago when they were a playoff team. But it's just, like – it's this fifth starter that just kind of holds a spot with that group mm-hmm. that allows you to empower, you know, your second unit. And I think it'd be interesting to have Wiggins with that second group too, you know, and still mix him back in. But I think that's the way you get to a 10-man rotation, I guess is my answer, is you start Okogie and you leave the other guys in a relatively similar role to which, you know, which they had. And I don't know. I mean, it's got to be considered. You got to be considering...
At what point does Okogie force his way in? Like, what more does he have to do to find minutes? Because at this point, I don't have an answer to that question. I don't know what he can do better. Maybe, I mean, we don't get to watch practice, but everything we've heard about his practice habits are good. So it's not as if we've heard, well, he just doesn't have it in practice and he kind of turns it on during the games. Like, we haven't heard that. So I can't assume that that's the case. I've heard great things about him in practice and film and all these other things behind the scenes that we don't get access to. And then when he gets on the floor, it's always productive. Good things happen. And he finds a way to make an impact, even if it's in these small little spurts that he gets.
Well, I think he's gotten better, too.
That, yes, he has.
Like, the energy's been there from the whole, you know, from the kickoff of the season. But I thought last night, too, it was sweet to see him. Like driving to the bucket and drop offs to Gorgui Dieng. Like, he's attracting that second defender through his attack.
And how excited was he? How excited was he when that worked?
Yeah.
He was almost more excited about the pass to Gorgui than the oop he caught from Tyus.
Well, it's because, you know, I mean, the oop's something he's done before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the distributing, like, that's not something he did in college.
Right.
Like, he was just a, like, magnet to the rim sort of guy. And so to me, that showed, you know, development, like additional skill sets. And I think that, not just the energy, it was what makes the argument stronger for finding a way to make this guy, you know, part of the group, which is, you know, I mean, have we ever done a podcast where we've not talked about Josh Okogie getting into the rotation?
I like, haven't,
so,
no, yeah.
No, but it, I mean, it's a, it's a real thing. And this team, to compete in this Western Conference, it needs a little bit more. Like, it's so good. You need something that unleashes, you know, and unleashes the group in a way that gets more out of it. And there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that Josh does that. Yeah. And I don't know. So it doesn't need to be, obviously, my grid from the article, but my hope...
But it should be, 1500ESPN.com.
Yep.
My hope is that they're having those conversations. What could we do? You know, what could we do if all our guys are heavy or healthy that, you know, we're able to get, you know, Josh into the rotation? Because there are possibilities, though it is kind of, you know, it's tricky. It's like there's a chemistry to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have to be, I mean, and Tibbs would have to be creative, obviously, with the rotations to try to make it work without disrupting
Tibbs everything. And creative don't go well together.
But I also feel like when doing this, to your point about Wiggins, having Wiggins come off the bench, like, forget about how much money Andrew's making. You know what I mean? Like, forget while he's making max money and you can't have a max guy come off the bench. Like, forget about that. Like, this is about what is going to be good for the team and maximizing the production that you can get from the team. And it's not, in your scenario, especially, Dane, it's not like you're having Wiggins come off the bench and then he's playing 15 minutes a night. Like, no, he's still getting starters minutes.
He still gets the third most minutes.
Yeah.
In that, behind Covington and Towns, from what I laid out.
You know, so what difference, so what difference would it even make if he's coming off the bench or starting at that point?
Like you said, throw out the contract. I mean, he knows he's not performing at a $25 million a year. Everybody knows it.
Yeah.
It's so not it's a secret.
And it's not to say he can't get back into the starting rotation, you know, next year when the, you know, different guys, you know, fall off the books and it's a different group. But if it is something that could lead to, you know, better execution, more out of this team, like
more wins.
Yeah. More wins.
I mean, Tibbs is trying to save his job right now. Right. You know,
I I was hesitant on that for a long time. I was like, all right, we got to, you know, ride him. But I don't know. He's played 353 games in his career. It's not a small amount. Like, it's, if you're not...
It's a pretty large sample size.
Yeah, if you're not getting, like...
At this point, you kind of are who you are.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to... So when they traded for Dario Saric, I, you know, texted like a scout guy, I know, in the league. And, you know, I was excited about the Saric, you know, acquisition and that. And I was like, well, yeah. And, you know, and like, he can, you know, he's still young and he can develop into something more. And he's like, I really like Saric, but normally at 24 years old, the guy is who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Wiggins is 23. And so, I don't know, maybe this guy isn't all knowing, but that is kind of the mentality is typically you are who you are when you're after, you know, 4 or 5 years, 23, 24 years old. And, you know, Wiggins is there, so...
And it's worth noting, Sharks has only played 188 games in the NBA now.
Yeah.
Compared to, what, now 354 for Wiggins now, right?
Right. Yeah.
Almost twice as many.
So that's...
Yeah.
I mean, yes, Sharks is a little bit older, but Wiggins has far more NBA experience. And I know Sharks was professional overseas, but the NBA is a different animal.
I'm with you. It's just... And, you know, why not shake it up? Like, this... I don't think it would... like, ruin them. Like, I don't think you would see this huge...
Well, they can't play worse on the road because of it.
that's for sure. You know, I think another thing to mention with the, like, rotation in that group is you had no Jeff Teague last night, right? And mm-hmm. that puts Okogie into the rotation. But it does nothing to having Anthony Tolliver, you know, be out there. And it shouldn't. Like, it changes the wing and point guard dynamic. Like, there's still... four bigs behind Anthony Tolliver. Like, he's not going to get into the rotation anytime any of the wings or the point guards, you know, get hurt. So that's another just kind of floundering asset,
yeah,
you know, on your bench. And that's also something I wrote about is, like, if they can find a way, now that Tolliver's trade eligible as of Saturday, you know, to find a way to repurpose him into a wing, I just think the possibilities of plugging in a wing that's somewhere around as good as Anthony Tolliver, you know, via trade, that makes a lot more sense because, you know, it's just right now for Tolliver to play, like, Gibson or Saric have to play, miss, like, mm-hmm. be hurt.
And I think with Tolliver, I know that he became eligible to be traded on the 15th, which was, what, Saturday?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we see him traded for another month, and I know you touched on this, but because Jared Bayless isn't eligible to be attached with somebody else,
right.
I think that if you could somehow combine those two, that you're more likely to get off both of them.
I think I slept on that as part of a nice little sneaky little asset in mm-hmm. that trade is, you know, they can attach Bayless on, you know, if they want to, but have it be Tyus, you know, you want to have it be, you know, Taj Gibson, Jeff Teague, like, that allows you to bring back even more money.
Taj is pretty safe.
I would
be surprised if Taj gets traded. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to find a way to get off Teague.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I guess I'm just saying it allows you, it's this little, like, cap space gift card that another team would be intrigued by. Like, you talk about some of those really bad teams who are now just looking to find a way to have, you know, space for next season. Like, Jared Bayless is attractive to them
mm-hmm.
because even if they just waive him, like Austin Rivers was just waived, it's like, all right, now we know we've got X amount of, I mean, Bayless is $8.5 million. That's $8.5 million more. Like, somebody like the Knicks, like, that would be, you know, that'd be something they'd be interested in. They got Courtney Lee. Like, maybe you're able to work something out around there. Like, there is value in that. And in Tolliver, too. You combine the two of those guys together, that's $14 million cap space gift card at a minimum that you're just mm-hmm. giving to somebody. Somebody would pay for that. And Anthony Tolliver can play.
And the Knicks would like to have some cap space.
We've talked about that.
They would like to have some money to spend.
In Oakland right now that they might be going after in the summer if he ends up leaving, it
would allow them to not only go pursue Durant, but also somebody else, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't just want to have the one max cap slot. They want to have another 15, 20 to get another guy because... Well, my opinion is just KD and Porzingis probably isn't enough. Like,
sure. I think it's a lot of fun, but it's not enough to win a title. Like, it's a lot of fun to watch, and I'd be super excited to see it, but just not winning a title with those two.
I guess as it pertains to the Wolves and the rest of the league, is there's going to be a lot of interesting free agents out there next year. And the money is tighter because the 2016 salaries, those overpays are still on so many teams' books. Like,
mm-hmm.
those expiring contracts – that used to be valuable, like, remember 5 years ago where people would trade for expiring contracts, mm-hmm. like, that sort of thing sneaking back up, you know, in value. And, so I watch that. The Jared Bayless, like, who's somebody I just was like, whatever, he'll just get cut or something. He's actually a trade asset. That's interesting.
Will he ever play a minute for the Wolves, do you think?
I don't think so, no. I mean, he wouldn't be in the rotation over any...
I know. I'm just curious if...
I think if he does,
he ever steps on the floor wearing a Wolves uniform.
If he does, it would have been a game like last night.
I know he's probably not. Do we think he's even ever active?
I mean, maybe we haven't got any sort of indication on what's going on.
Well, I know. I mean, he's around the team now, which is not news. Like, he's been around the team for probably 2 weeks now. But when they first made the trade for him, he was in New York doing his rehab the whole time. Like, he came for the introductory press conference and then flew back to New York and wasn't around for 2 more weeks.
January 11th is when he can get traded again.
With an asset. He could get traded today if you trade Jared Bayless straight up for something else. You could part ways with him right now. But just to clarify, he can be traded with someone else as part of the deal on January 11th.
I got a question for both of you guys before we get out of here. We brought up Taj.
The shoe defense was awesome.
That was fantastic.
That was the first time I've ever seen someone actually use their shoe as, not a weapon, I don't think a weapon is the correct word, but to try and block a shot with. Like, he made every effort to try and get Belly shot out of here. With his shoe.
You asked Tibbs about it after the game.
I did. Tibbs has never. I've made Tibbs laugh twice this year.
Wow.
I think I'm in the lead.
That might be a record.
I think I'm in the lead.
Stamp on Minneapolis.
I'm trying, man.
But with Taj, would you guys bring him back next year?
Depends on the price. I mean, I think that's going to be the answer to just about anybody other than Jeff Teague. I wouldn't bring Jeff Teague back no matter what the price is.
Because with Taj, he's made it clear, like, he doesn't care if he starts or comes off the bench.
I think
so.
Taj,
it's like you're not bringing him. It's not going to be a situation where, yeah, I'll come back. You know, if they want him back, yeah, I'll come back, but I have to be the starting power forward. Like, he's a guy that's going to do whatever.
I wouldn't bring him back. I think you got to play next year. Sarge needs to be playing 30 to 35 minutes a game.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you know, you can repurpose Taj into like a combo backup center slash power forward, which isn't happening right now. So right. I just don't think there's going to be more than, you know, 12, 15 minutes a night for him on this team. Or I think that's smart, is to, you know, give Sarge that full on role there. So I don't think it makes any sense.
If they moved Gorgie, would you bring him back? Because that might open up more minutes for him.
If they feel like they can have him be a center and back up, because then he can pick up 12, 15 minutes backing up Cat plus 12, 15 minutes, you know, backing up Sarge. If you can finagle the rotation in that sort of way, then yeah. I mean, moving Gorgie is going to be tough.
I know.
That's literally the opposite of the Jerry Bayless and Anthony Tolliver thing, because that eats into their next year's cap space, plus the year after that's cap space too, because he's making 16 next year, 17 the year after that.
Yeah, and I bring that up because, like, I love Taj. Like, I've been a fan of Taj forever, and he's been great in this locker room. And, you know, I know it's just like he's just a role player, but they're just some guys that you want to keep in your locker room just because it's good for like chemistry and continuity and all of that stuff. So
I'm with you. I just think the idea, you do that for 2 years. He was that vet for 2 years. That's why you signed him for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just probably be time, in my opinion, to move on after this season.
And it's going to depend who's in charge if he wants to come back. I mean, he's a Tibbs guy.
That's like, true.
That's what he is, and we don't know if he'd want to be here if Tibbs isn't here, which is very possible.
He likes Tibbs.
I see what you did there.
Well played. Well played.
No, that was actually stupid.
Very on brand.
That's Dane Moore. That's Danny Cunningham. I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for watching and or listening or doing both. You can find this podcast on podcast1.com. on iTunes, wherever you find podcasts, and, of course, 1500ESPN.com. Follow Dane on Twitter, at DaneMoreNBA. Follow Danny at RealDCunningham. Follow me at MannyHill84. Check out Dane's piece on 1500ESPN.com that came out yesterday. It's called More on Monday. He drops one every Monday. And
as the name would suggest.
Yes. And, of course, check out Danny's content on 1500ESPN.com as well. And thanks for watching and listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Raised by Wolves.